Hey guys, this is Danny McDermott from The Danny McDermott Show. If you want to see our show live, it's every Wednesday at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern. Trust me, you want to see it then. You'll see all the screw-ups. It's great. Our show is an adult show, I must admit, but that's only because we're childish. Most of the guests that we have on the show are my friends, so you can just watch us hang out as buddies. It's fun. Just chill, relax, enjoy. Hey, welcome to the Danny McDermott Show, guys. Thanks for watching. We appreciate it. It's been a crazy week. A lot of things going on. Today is there's a lot of national holidays today, which I don't know if I would call all these holidays, but let's see. We got International Be Kind to Lawyers Day. I don't understand that one at all. Why would we want to do that? It should probably come with further instructions. You know, outside of paying their bill, I'm not sure how you can actually be kind to a lawyer. Do you know, Kevin?
I'm at a loss.
Do they deserve it? They don't deserve it, do they? I guess some of them, the ones who fight for injustice, I guess. But most of them just fight for money. Let's be honest.
No,
right? It's also ex-spouse day. It's like whenever you want to just say to your ex, I am so glad you're my ex that I want Hallmark to make a card that says, if I had the chance, I'd divorce you all over again. That is
great. I'd like it to be a pop-up card that can have a little alimony check in the hands.
There you go. I don't know though, man. Maybe a knife would be better. Anyway, okay. International Moment of Laughter Day. Moment of laughter. Not a fit of laughter. Not even an hour or two of laughter. Actually, that's a long time to laugh, Kevin. You know, in medieval times, a moment was 90 seconds. And I think that's a long time to laugh, like straight. Isn't it?
Yes, it is. That's impossible without pharmaceutical help.
It doesn't have to be pharmaceutical. It can be grown in your backyard.
Okay, I'll buy that.
Especially since it's legal in New York now.
It would have to be stronger than cannabis.
I don't know, man.
Mushrooms, at minimum. I have to get at least mushrooms out of this.
Oh, man. At least some oxy. Is that what you're saying?
Something. And I did realize that when you talked about knifing your ex-spouse, that may be how you're kind to a lawyer.
No. I didn't. Why would you say that? I didn't say my ex-spouse.
I understand. I was the generic you. The card has a knife. That's
all right. Well, it sounded like you meant me, Kevin. And now I'm going to have to answer for that.
No, I know your ex-spouse.
She never listens to this episode. Oh. Or her lawyer. Which is why we brought up Be Kind to Lawyers Day. So if her lawyer's listening, yay! We're being nice to you today. I'm sorry about the comments earlier. All right, then we got let's see, National Bookmobile. Oh, Look Up in the Sky Day. I was going to skip that one, but come back to it. But that's all right. That's my bad. Look Up in the Sky Day was invented for the people who punched their lawyer. This is Kevin writing, if it's my ex's lawyer listening. When the attorney regains consciousness, they typically lay there and look up at the sky. Sometimes they even get to ride a stretcher, maybe an ambulance, both of whom offer a chance to look up at the sky.
That's so nice.
They are ambulance chasers, so I don't know how they get hit by an ambulance.
Maybe they're busy looking up at the sky.
Maybe the ambulance driver is texting. You know, that's kind of convenient. If they're going to text and drive, at least they can pick up the people they run over, right?
That's a good point. It's almost considerate.
If you get run over by a hearse, do you get a free coffin?
I think you may get a closed coffin, but I don't know if it's free.
Well, not if they just run over your bowels.
That's true.
Oh, this is morbid. Also, National Bookmobile Day. Kids, you see, bookmobiles, nobody knows what books are anymore. Kids don't even know, really. They're going to think it's, or a bookmobile at least, they're going to think it's a truck made of books. You know, when was the last bookmobile? Really? The 70s, maybe?
Maybe.
Kevin, this was your joke. You should know this.
I actually didn't write that joke.
I know I did. I'm lying. I just like to blame you.
It's Kindle Awareness Day. Because bookmobiles don't exist.
There you go. Oh, is that me glitching? Was that me glitching? I couldn't tell. Anyway, also, now this is my favorite. National Dolphin Day. Now, I don't know if you knew this, Kevin, but dolphins have bigger and more complex brains than human beings. Except, of course, except for the dolphins that play football in Miami, of course.
It looks like National Have Sex with a Cruciferous Vegetable. That's what the graphic looks like. I mean, those are both two types of asses.
So look at the size of it. Look at the size. Let's pull up that brain again. Look at the size of that thing. The human is on the left, obviously. The one on the right looks like a fly with, you know, the eyes on a fly.
It does. It actually looks like the brain has a brain, which is a nice feature for a brain.
Oh, my God. I'm just telling Benny it's time.
The brain has airbags.
Yeah, right? You know? It's brain airbags. I just want to try to squeeze a dolphin brain into a human and just see what happens. Just, you know, just see how they, you know, raise it, like get a baby dolphin brain and put it in the human skull. And just we see you, Vincent. Don't worry.
I'm picturing putting a dolphin brain in a human skull and the child going to the supermarket and laying in the cart and covering themselves with tuna cans.
No, but if they're raised from a baby, right? You put it in a baby's head, you put the dolphin brain in the baby's head, and he's raised like a human. I mean, imagine what he could accomplish.
I bet he could swim and breach the pool and then
right, you know, right? You know, he's like a baby, just throw him in the pool. He's like, oh my God, it's hilarious. We had Vincent there. There he goes. Okay, so that's wait. We got a couple more here. We got National Pecan Day or National Anti-Nut Allergy Day. It's like we're going to make a holiday and we don't care about you nut allergy people because we love pecans.
That seems reasonable.
Right? Why not? That's when they all stay in, the people with nut allergies. Then we got Reach as High as You Can Day. Who comes up with these? Seriously, who decided to make a day to reach as high as you can?
I got to tell you, too, when I look these up, there are a number of different websites that have all of the holidays. And, you know, when you're looking up something on a Google search, you have a little bit of a preview and then you click through. And one of the ones I look at, it has all kinds of things like National Steak and BJ Day. And then I click through and it's like, yeah, not for you, pal. And dude, it comes up with like reach as high as you can.
See, now that's a day I could celebrate.
Everybody likes that. Except maybe the cow.
But this day, reach as high as you can day, seems like more like anti-short people day, doesn't it?
Yes. I'll tell you a funny story. I was in a supermarket. I'm 5 feet, 7 inches tall. I'm in a supermarket in Little Rock, Arkansas. I'm just telling our viewers. And for the first time in my life, I actually need help with an item on the top shelf. It's not just on the top shelf. It's on the top shelf and all the way back. So if my elbow was like at my forearm and the rest of my arm was just as long, I wouldn't need help. But right. In this case, I do. And this particular supermarket, I'm traveling the country doing comedy. You have to push a button if you need assistance.
Oh, my God.
So I push a button and I'm waiting there. And around the corner at the end of the aisle comes a guy that's about 5'2". And it's a long aisle. I'm yelling down the aisle. I'm like, I'm not giving you a boost, guy.
Oh, my God. That's hilarious.
It was in a different aisle on the bottom shelf and he knew about it.
But, that's hilarious.
Oh, when he turned the corner, I was like, what? This is who you send to me?
They should have specified what the help should be on the button.
and the button should be lower if you need a tall person.
Right?
Because otherwise you might have to push the low button to be like, hey, come over here. I need somebody to push that button so I get a tall person over here.
Yeah. No, they should make the button too high for you to reach.
That's great.
All right. So now we've got two amazing guests on today. And one of them is a very, very busy man. Oh, they both are very, very busy guys, actually. They both work their butts off. And we just lost one of them.
All right.
So what we're going to do is we're going to bring on my very good friend, personal friend. We started out in New York City doing comedy together. He's a regular at the Improv and the Laugh Factory. Most recently, he served as one of the head writer/producers on 140 episodes of the syndicated comedy game show, Funny You Should Ask. Please welcome, on camera, he is best known for his recurring role as young Eli David on NCIS as the lead on a season of MTV's Punk'd, starring in a season of Mr. Personalities for Mark Cuban's HD Net. Our guest starring opposite John Lovitz and Bill Bellamy on Mr. Box Office. Additionally, he has been seen as a lead in feature films, Ouija's Exorcism from the Dead, and Fox's 30 Nights of Paranormal Activity, where he played an eerily good Abe Lincoln. Please welcome Ben Morrison.
All right.
Thank you.
What's up, brother?
You really read the whole intro there.
Oh, yeah.
He did.
Yeah,
I thought he was going to push a button and ask for help with it.
I've needed help occasionally.
Well, Ben's here now.
Yeah. Yeah, I am. I'm good, buddy. It's been a minute. You're looking good. Reporting live from Times Square, I see.
Yes, yes, yes. This is where I live. Times Square. Uh-huh. I set up my studio outside because it's just beautiful out now, so...
That's wonderful, man. Good to see you.
It's good to see you, man. So we met, how many years ago? Do we want to say? Do you remember?
About 20 years ago.
It's got to be at least 20 years ago. And now did we meet at my comedy room, or did we meet somewhere else? Do you remember?
I think it was probably the Underground. I feel like that was.
Yeah, I know that's right. Wasn't that where you did your first comedy spots?
No, the first show I ever did was at Stand Up New York. That was like, it was a pre-show. It was a bringer show. That was July 4th weekend 2000.
So for those of you who don't know, a bringer show is when you're just starting out and you're not proven and probably not funny. And so you have to get your friends to fill the seats so that you can get experience in front of a live audience. So
Yeah, you can generally do about four of those before all your friends are like, I'm not going to these goddamn shows anymore. You're not funny enough for me to keep hanging these.
In fact, they usually decide they hate comedy after that.
Yeah. The first grand opening, grand closing.
Right. Exactly. What they do is they fill the show with new comics who have never done a show. And so they're like, wow, this is comedy?
Yeah.
That used to happen at the Comedy Store all the time. Remember that?
Yeah. Comedy Store. So are you not back in LA yet, right?
Not yet. I'm saving some money right now. Uh-huh. And, I got a couple of deals possibly brewing out there. But what about you? What have you been doing during COVID? You haven't been able to do stand up, right?
Yeah.
The online stuff.
I've done virtual shows. I started super funny virtual. I'm not a huge fan of virtual shows, but I built a whole green screen studio in my place and have been able to do like the multimedia shows that I do, but virtually, which actually works really well for a computer screen.
Well, you know, this is one of the things I love about you, man. Vincent's calling right now. Vincent, we see you in the green room. We're going to bring you in a bit.
You've crossed the fourth wall, Danny.
Oh, no problem, buddy. No problem. We see you. It looks like you're frozen, but see how professional our show is, ladies and gentlemen. All right, buddy. I'll see you in a bit. All right. That's the problem when you book your own show. Sometimes you have to answer the phone call.
Yeah. Never stop working, buddy.
Oh, geez. That's one of the things I love about you, Ben, is you're a lot like me in a ways, but you do even more than me. You're one of those people that produces their own stuff. You work your butt off. You build. I remember way back in the day when you built your first voiceover booth.
Mm-hmm. That's real. I commissioned a friend of mine to build like an enclosed space to do voiceovers. But my buddy is like a giant. He's like one of these guys who's like 6'8", and he's really good with wood. And what I thought would just be like a little, hey, set up my little voiceover. He built like, it weighed like hundreds of pounds out of thick, like oak wood, like this geometric, it looked like the fucking, the TARDIS from Doctor Who. Like that's how big this goddamn thing was.
How the hell did you get into the house?
It actually had to be assembled in the apartment. And especially during like my mid to late 20s when like I had to move a lot, you know, bad relationships, fucked up roommates, like your yearly shit, I got to get out. Just I vividly remember disassembling that goddamn thing and like almost throwing my back out. And until after a while, I was like, fuck it. And I put it on Craigslist.
Yeah.
Sounds like it could have been like a safe house if you had an abusive mate.
Honestly, yeah.
You just take a little refuge in there.
Screw you, slam.
Yeah, in a domestic abuse situation.
You're not allowed on
the inside, so.
You're not allowed in here or on the deck.
Although, conversely, it's probably a great place to do domestic abuse in because it really held the sound in.
Nobody's going to hear you scream.
He's like,
save your
energy. Called one more time. I'm taking you to the smack shack. That's what I call it, the smack shack.
The smack shack. I love it.
It's good.
But right now, here, look. Voiceover studio.
Nice.
Oh, that is nice.
Now, isn't there too much surface in there to bounce off of? Don't you have the egg crate stuff or something in there?
Oh, yeah. No, I have soundproofing, but this room is very big, and I soundproof the whole room. It holds sound really good.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. Because cool.
What's on the other side of this camera is, you know, a pretty big wall, and the ceilings are really tall. There might be like 15-foot high ceilings, so I can do a full 10x10 green screen.
And you
edges and do live stream stuff.
You solely produce stuff and get work as an actor and comedian, and so you don't work any job or anything like that, and you haven't for a long time, right?
Yeah, I mean, the last job I had was writing on the comedy game show. In fact, that's the only job, like actual, like drive to an office job I've like ever had.
Was that with that was with Chris Newberg, right?
No, that wasn't with Chris. That was this was the funny you should ask. It's a syndicated show that a bajillion people we know wrote on. Greg Wilson, Claude Stewart, Dwayne Perkins.
Oh, Dwayne wrote on that too? I love him.
Yeah. But I mean I left that job in 2018. Yeah. And I've always known how to do shit from like producing, editing, fucking websites, whatever. Like if I was able to not have to leave my house to pay my rent, I was willing to figure out how to do it.
There you go.
That's a good goal.
Well, now how did you get up on Punk'd with Ashton Kutcher? How did that happen?
That was right after I moved to LA. That was kind of a fluke, honestly, in terms of how I got plugged into the audition. In New York, this is like 2005, I had done a hidden camera show for MTV called Damage Control.
Okay.
That was like a big bomb for the network, but it was like the biggest production they'd ever done. A kid thought he had been left home alone for the weekend, but MTV had buried like 30 hidden cameras in his actual house. And then would come in character and fuck with him for like 2 days. Like it caused nervous breakdowns and shit. It was Google Damage Control.
That sounds horrible.
Amazingly though, like some of them, because they basically hired all the like improv actors out of New York. And like, that was where I met Nick Kroll. That was like one of his first gigs.
Yep.
Brian Husky, who's in everything, bald glasses, everything. He was on that with me. So I wound up meeting a lot of people that would later go on to be pretty famous in the comedy improv world. Anyway, no one watched the show, so I moved to LA and just had a general meeting with MTV because I had just moved. And it just so happened, she was like, you know, they've been trying to find the lead for Punk'd for like a month. They can't find the lead guy. And I'm like, no shit, when are the auditions? And she goes, the final callback's tomorrow. And I was like, huh, can you get me into that? And, you know, because I had done a whole season of the hidden camera work, I knew the format, and it's like a really specialized format. So finding someone that knows how to work hidden camera like intensely is a big like tick mark for like, okay, this is our guy, because we don't have to teach him how to do hidden camera, especially something like Punk'd. And just got slipped in to what became very apparent was the final audition of people that had been auditioning together for like a couple months. They're like, who the fuck are you? I was like, I don't know what I'm doing. I had heard horror stories about what they make you do in the auditions, like all this crazy shit, like go on the street, piss someone off. Like, and I think they had done that, but this was the final one, and just walked into a room with Ashton and the team. And I was like, oh, this really is the final audition. And instead of all that crazy crap, it was just improv games. And like, you know, I grew up playing improv games. So quickly like realized that I was a better improver than people in the room. And basically after that one audition, a couple hours later, the casting director called me and she was like, he kind of gave you the season.
Wow.
Nice.
Wow. Well, you know, what's great about that. All those actors who auditioned for months are going, see, that's what happens. They already know who they want.
Yeah.
The audition's all bullshit.
That's hilarious. Yeah. Hopefully I made someone quit the business that day. Hopefully.
I'm sure you did. You almost made me quit. No.
Never.
No. You've been a great friend, man. In fact, you've done game shows a lot. So what we've done is we've designed a little segment where you can judge TikToks between me and Kevin.
Okay. Right through it. All right. Let me know what I gotta do.
Well, there'll be TikToks.
We got a new TikTok.
There will be TikToks.
And now for the Intergalactic TikTok Champion of the Universe contest. Ah!
Nice.
So, first there's three what are they called, Kevin?
Categories.
Thank you.
How is that the word you forgot?
I don't know. My brain wouldn't spit it out.
I'm here for that though, Ben. That's really all that matters.
That's hilarious. Your three
Kevin,
videos. Yeah.
All right, and really, this is just lemonade. Just so you know. The first one is advice, and you got to judge who
are,
does.
Are we allowed to drink on the Danny McDermott show?
You can. I'm just not. I got to run a show, so I'm not.
You know. I got an 8 o'clock spot, buddy. Let's crack a White Claw.
There you go.
There you go.
My advice for this week is to never listen to Kevin Fitzgerald or take any of his gummies because I don't understand what's happening right now. And he told me this would enhance my thinking and open my mind.
Okay, that's mine.
All right, I'm not sure if I'm here to give advice or to get advice, but I have yet to see a video on TikTok from someone I don't already follow that has been interesting enough to get me to follow and hunt down part two of a video. So either you have to stop doing that or explain to me why I should start doing that. Thank you.
Definitely the LSD one.
Yes, awesome.
Definitely the LSD. That was, you know, that was nice and weird and you committed to it. Plus, I love that fucking like Renaissance fair music that you found.
Yeah, isn't that cool?
Yeah. I've always said to myself, TikTok needs more piccolo.
Piccolo.
You know, now in retrospect, I see it.
You hear it.
All right. And so I win one. Yes. All right. Next one is next category is. That's funny.
Okay.
Kevin doesn't even have to try sometimes, and he's going to be funnier than me no matter what.
Uh-huh. All right,
now mine.
I thought the Thornbirds was the last miniseries on TV. How long was that thing?
Hey, there was no restrictions.
Is that your idea? Is that your idea of what you think kids want?
No. This competition is the only way Kevin and I can force ourselves to do TikToks.
First, then let me apologize to you, and then let me ask you to declare a winner.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of times people do, like, you know, 5-second clips of them dancing to a popular song. Danny was like, I want to dance out an entire concept album.
It was.
I didn't know what to do with Kevin's square face. How am I supposed to beat that?
Based on video length alone, the Stayin' Alive clip, for sure.
And I actually, they filmed that in my neighborhood in Brooklyn when I was a kid.
There you go.
Yeah.
Okay, but Kevin, you put no effort into that whatsoever.
No, I think of something and I throw it on tape and I really go with the first one.
Danny, winning a competition with as little effort as possible is how you stay alive.
I know. I knew Kevin was going to win that one. He just looks funnier dancing. He just does. There's nothing I can do. All right.
Yeah. If your clip was literally the last 10 seconds, it would have won.
God damn it.
Okay, see?
edit, Danny.
I'm definitely going to lose the next one.
Oh, Christ. Is that even longer?
No.
Can I just pick not you right now and we can just get to the end of the charade?
Don't worry, you will in a second.
Our shack cereal, honey monster, he got something. That chicken on the front of the cold plate box, I messed him up pretty bad. Snap, crackle and pop, I wanked, diddled and fucked all three of those guys. And frankly, Coco Pops, the milk goes chocolatey for a number of reasons.
Okay.
That was Russell Brand.
It was Russell Brand.
Just want to
it's
go
a
ahead.
Lip sync competition.
Go ahead apologize again. So long ago, deaf with the record that was mixed a long time ago. It could be done, but only I could do it. For those that could dance and clap your hands to it. I start to think, and then I sink into the paper like I was in. When I'm writing, I'm trapped in between the line. I skate.
That one.
Yeah, that was the best one.
I think I was a vuvuzela away from a clean sweep, if I'm reading the room correctly.
If I could be honest with both of you, though, no matter who wins,
we both lost.
Yes, no, I agree with that. I don't mind.
Oh, my God.
Let's do a new competition called Quit Talk and see who can quit TikTok the first.
I guarantee you my quit video is 5 seconds.
Who can quit and never come back?
All right, so look at how I'm shiny tonight. What the hell? I'm sweating or something. See what competitions do to me?
It's who you know.
Oh, I gotta turn my light up here. If I can quit talk. That's hilarious.
So, quit.
It's, tick stop.
Tick stop. Better.
All right. Well, that was miserably horrible but funny. So at least we got something now.
That's the name of my first comedy album.
Your first? I got it here. Hold on. Your first comedy album. I have it. I didn't memorize everything, Ben. I'm sorry.
No, you really don't. We don't. It's a long time ago. We don't even need to.
Is it? No, that's wild. Man Up, Stand Up. Was that it?
No, that's completely not me at all.
Oh, that's a TV series documentary you were in. I don't know what
are you on my IMDb trying to find something to talk
yes,
about?
Yes, I am.
So, Ben,
because
let me ask you.
A question I didn't research.
If you were not in the entertainment business, what do you think you would be doing for a living?
Probably Danny McDermott's assistant. It's the only thing I've ever wanted to do.
And I'll tell you what, there's room for growth in that role.
Yeah.
Ben once did an impression of me yelling at the comics for eating my chicken wings when I was running a show.
I did. It was really funny. I think I remember eating those wings too.
Yeah, and it was Ben that did it.
I was one of many. It wasn't just me.
I yelled at everybody, man. I was like, I run this show. I work my ass off. I'm out there for 4 hours and you guys eat my food.
Yep.
It was ridiculous.
We sure do.
It was ridiculous.
Unattended food should not be eaten anyway. You're lucky all they did was eat it.
Yeah, they could have messed with it. Comedians can think of really crazy things to do.
Is that how, like, creepers, like, get... Let's not get canceled. Like, if you're, like, a creepy guy, do you, like, and you, like, you're into larger women, do you, like, roofie their food?
Okay. And next question.
It's in the mayonnaise jar. We have no idea when she's going to spoon it out onto the sandwich, but we're ready just in case.
I forgot where it is in the mayonnaise. Let's just say after one particular sandwich.
We're an egg salad away from a good time.
Okay, we're definitely getting canceled for this show. Between the TikToks and that joke.
I just apologize. That's all.
What is, Ben, what is one of your favorite shows you've done? You've worked on
live show or like TV thing?
No. I mean, like, you know, television. I mean, for me, NCIS must have been that. I mean, that's a big show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was fun. It's a really good crew. It's like one of those television crews that have been working together for like 10 years.
Right.
So it was real. Everything was very, very professional. Everyone was very nice.
And you played a recurring character, right?
Yeah. Yeah. The father of one of the leads of the first like 10 seasons in flashbacks.
Okay. All right, man. But still, that was good, man. You got a network show. That was amazing.
Thank you.
Yeah. No, I've always been amazed at how much work you work. I mean, you work begets work and you always work and you're always, you know, if you're not getting work, you're making work, creating work. So,
well, you know, I got to pay this goddamn rent somehow. You know what I'm saying? Like, it would be awesome if my fucking dad invented Band-Aids or whatever, but I'm not one of these lucky Hollywood types whose fucking grandfather like started MGM or some shit. We got to work.
Yep. No shit. What was the drunk shopping network? I have to ask this.
Fuck, was a drunk shopping network? Are you going to the very bottom of my IMDb?
Yes.
That's new shit.
It sounds like a great idea, though. Like, you sell things that appeal to drunk people.
No, that's the reason I brought it up, because it just seemed like such a ridiculous thing. It was one of the things I just had to ask about.
I think it was like a fucking podcast where they put it on IMDb. I don't remember. It was a long time ago.
All right. Well, it sounds like a great show, but
yeah,
the aftermath is a blackout. It's okay.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I didn't see the Ouija exorcism, but that was a feature, and you were the lead.
Oh yeah, it was real fucking bad.
Oh, was it?
Was it like Danny and Kevin TikTok contest bad?
Hold on.
Proper British Sex. I've seen that one. In fact, you worked with Shant on that.
Mm-hmm.
Who I introduced you to.
Mm-hmm.
Still good, you guys work a lot together now, right?
We were pre-lockdown. Like, he was one of two filmmakers that I worked with pretty frequently for Super Funny, making short films.
Tell us about Super Funny, because I know that's your baby, and it was a great show at the Hollywood Improv, and I'm sure it's amazing online too.
Yeah, well, I brought it back live. We did our first live in-person show this past weekend, actually, with Ahmed in Venice.
Oh, I love Ahmed. Great mm-hmm. guy.
So that's stand up with photos. Like, imagine a TED Talk fucked a Netflix comedy special, right? So it's a comedian doing stand up, but they're controlling images next to them the whole time. So it's storytelling with photos of your crazy uncle, or social commentary, like with the tweets that you're talking about, you know? Kind of the late night format, but live on stage and not all political, not even much of it's political. It's like using the format to kind of deepen the storytelling that we as comedians are able to do.
I saw Eric. I forget his last name now. Eric, who does all the voices and the
Eric Schwartz.
Yeah.
Yeah, Eric. He was on the show on Sunday. He's fucking amazing. I love Eric.
He is. He's so good, man.
Eric needs to be more famous.
I agree. He did the one I saw was where he had a heart attack on stage.
Yeah, he did that on Sunday. It's really funny. On Sunday.
That's such mm-hmm. a great bit.
It is a great bit.
You want to tell the audience about that?
He just starts with a big musical number, and then as part of the musical number, fakes having a heart attack and then collapses on the stage. But then the video playing behind him is another whole 2-minute number that he does in heaven. Well, he lays there on stage and then is resurrected on stage as the musical number ends, because it's all done with a big video screen. It's really funny.
It's genius.
That's a great idea.
Yeah.
And then I see Susanna in the chat says, how did I soundproof? Just go on Amazon and just search for soundproofing. You can get a pack of like 10 foam plates basically for like $20. I just bought a shit ton.
All right, so where you're more than welcome to stay on, but where can people find you?
Best place, Instagram, @BenTheMorrison.
All right.
Susanna says, I just don't see them. You're not supposed to see them.
Let's not worry about that right now. You can talk about after the show.
I came here to talk about soundproofing hardware, Danny. Jesus.
It's the truth. And how would you fasten it to the wall? Would you use glue? Would you use a two-sided tape? Right?
Okay, Kevin, please.
Staple gun. Initially, I used tape, but they'd fall. And then eventually, I was just like, fuck it. Ka-ching.
All right.
So they're up all along the top of the room.
Ben, you're gonna want to meet our next guest. Guys, we're going to have, if you want to follow Ben, we're going to have everything in the description. We're on 9 different platforms now. But we're
nine.
Yeah, we're on 9 now, yeah.
Are you counting TikTok?
You from getting to 10?
I think 3 are imaginary, but I don't know.
Are you counting TikTok?
Oh, I didn't count TikTok.
Fan platforms. Fan platforms. And then, yeah, tell them, follow me on Instagram, at Ben the Morrison.
At Ben the Morrison. There you go. Mm-hmm. All right. So we're ready to bring on our next guest. This man is, in my opinion, a legend in he's a legend in the, in a lot of people's opinion, he's a legend in the special effects, practical effects business. He's known to have created the Wings and Dogma. He created one of the best prosthetic transformations seen for an independent film for Ellen Bernstein in the film Requiem for a Dream. Vincent Guastini.
All right.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Hey, buddy.
Nice to see you.
Thanks for coming on the show, bud.
Sure. Sorry. It's just been nuts. I'm sorry that I came in and out, in and out. I didn't know what the format of the show was. So.
No problem. Well, no problem. Ben welcome. Actually has another thing to do. I forgot. He's getting another show. But welcome. Welcome, man. It's good to see you, buddy.
Good to see you as well.
I was just in your studio. Is that where you're at right now?
Yes. Yep. Here you go.
He's got an amazing studio. Check this out, guys.
Wow. Very nice.
Okay. He's got so many creatures. The place is massive, massive. Now, how did you get into it?
Okay.
Yeah. You saw me there, Kevin.
You were in a meeting there and you showed a little bit
in LA,
of,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's like a museum. That's fantastic.
Yeah. How did you get started in this, Vincent?
I was, my father and mother used to watch a lot of horror movies. And then it amplified when they got separated. And my father would get me on the weekends to take me to 42nd Street. And we'd watch, back when you could watch, not of course what it was, which was porno, but you'd watch all the grindhouse movies, Bruce Lee movies, horror movies, science fiction movies. And so my whole education was on 42nd Street. I'd get to watch 2001: A Space Odyssey. Then the next weekend would be Planet of the Apes. And then that fascination from watching movies as a kid turned into kind of a passion. And so I'd watch Godzilla movies, Ray Harryhausen stuff, fantasy films. And then I found out that Dick Smith, after seeing The Exorcist, which scared the hell out of me, did the effects. And he was living in Larchmont, New York. And so as I got older, I started sending my sculptures to him. And he kind of critiqued them, took me under his wing. And then I decided to open up my own business when I felt I was good enough. And so there was a storefront for rent. And I took the storefront over. And I actually was not living home anymore. I was living in my shop in the storefront. And he started recommending me for jobs. Through the business I opened. And one of the things that he did besides The Exorcist, Amadeus, won the Oscar, was he hooked me up with jobs and a show that he was supervising called Monsters, which was the same company that did like Tales from the Dark Side and Monsters and Pet Sematary and a bunch of other movies and Stephen King films. So he got me involved with that studio. And I started doing my own jobs. And then the other big job that he recommended me for in my 20s is I got to take over after I was recommended to help out the first makeup artist who actually left on Last of the Mohicans. And so I wanted taking over that movie after that makeup artist left. And so in my 20s, I'm working with Michael Mann and doing bodies and scalpings and makeups and prosthetics. And so that was the first movie I kind of supervised. And I brought my crew that I worked with out of New York who were younger than me in some cases. And so it was a bunch of us kids that took over the effects for Last of the Mohicans.
That's incredible. What? Wow. I don't know. Some of our audience may not even know what that movie is, but that was one of the greatest movies. And
Daniel Day-Lewis, Madeline Stowe. Yeah, I mean, it was the number one movie for probably, I don't know, a couple of weeks or a month. And then Under Siege took its place, and then it became number two.
Oh, wow. Under Siege. That's funny. I remember that. So that was your first big gig, huh?
Yeah, my first big gig was a studio film. I was already doing TV series, independent films, but that was my first big credit.
That's incredible. The person
that actually produced that film went on, and he was in his 20s, older 20s. He was like 27. He went on to produce all of James Cameron movies like Avatar and Titanic, you know, small movies like that.
I actually know a guy who works with James Cameron. Probably going to have him on the show at some point, but he's working on the new Avatar. He makes creatures. Cool. I don't know if you know him, but we'll talk about it after. But yeah.
No, so, what's his name? I mean, the creature world's a small world. So if you know his name, I'll probably.
Yeah,
know.
I just want to get his last name right. We hung out a lot out in LA, but I just want to make sure I get his last. Tobolsky, Peter Tobolsky. Yeah.
Maybe he's a CGI type of guy, the visual effects designer. Nobody I know in the makeup effects or creature world.
I don't think he was makeup, but I think he was. Anyway, he showed me pictures of him with James Cameron and stuff, so I know he's legit.
Well, no, I'm not saying he's not. I'm just saying he's probably in the visual effects. There's visual effects, and then there's practical effects.
Right, right. Why don't you explain that to our viewers?
Well, practical really means anything physical or real in front of you. And visual effects can mean after the movie's done that they go into post and they add CGI or they add the visual effects in afterwards.
Right, right. And for practical effects, like for my movie, that I want a lot of practical effects. I think it's kind of better for in my opinion, for horror to have as much practical effects as possible. What do you think about that?
I agree, because most of the horror movies that I'm seeing, as soon as I start seeing a main creature or a main ghost, I mean, it works better for ghosts, but anything that looks too digital. Because a horror movie's visceral and it's supposed to be real. It's supposed to be in your face. It's supposed to be gritty. So as soon as you start seeing like something like a video game graphic in a horror movie, it kind of takes me out of it. I immediately go, oh boy. And even if the movie's good, I'll go, okay, well the movie's good, but I'm not engaged with this game graphic coming after me.
Yeah.
So that's part of the problem when you see that in a horror movie. You know, like, I mean, it was a beautiful movie that was done, Crimson Peak by Guillermo del Toro. And the ghosts in that were beautiful. And that was CG mixed with practical. But a great deal of it was CG. And it worked because it's a ghost film. But anything physical, you know, in a horror movie, especially something that's independent, I feel it doesn't work as good. You know, I really don't, you know,
like when they tried to hide Superman's mustache because he was doing another film. Did you see that?
I mean, that's a big budget film.
But you could tell.
Yeah. There's been, I mean, I'm not into people jumping around like jelly beans all over the place, you know, you know, I mean, I know superheroes do things, but, you know, I'm more like, you know, Christopher Nolan, when he does a movie, when there's CG, you could barely tell that it's there.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how real. He's very, very careful of what he chooses to be CG and what's practical. And there's a nice symbiosis in his film and styles that you can't tell what exactly is CG. Of course, when you see a full city block folding like a blanket, you know, of course, you know, it, you know, it's a visual effect, but it looks real.
That'd be difficult to do practical.
But it is true that if you have even one moment where you become conscious of what it is that you're looking at, you never really gain the same level of engagement.
Right.
Even if you're entertained, you disengage, you don't re-engage. So
you break the movie apart. So then you wind up coming out of it going, you know, that was a really good movie, but the creature looked fake. Or I really didn't buy the monster because I know it's CG. It's a computer graphic. So that, you know, but that's becoming a new style with the big, you know, especially superhero movies. And I get it, but, you know, you have to have that element. But, you know, I mean, John Favreau and Iron Man, almost every sequence that Iron Man was doing looked almost photoreal. I believed it, you know? And now most of these superhero movies, they crowd the scenes with so much stuff that you can't even keep your eye on one thing. It's like somebody took a giant bag of tennis balls and threw it at the screen, and you're so overwhelmed that you just sit there almost like, what am I watching? What am I going to focus on? And to me, it just becomes a visual, beautiful, designed mess to me.
Yeah. Well, it's that's what magicians do. They distract you from the fakeness of it by putting a lot there so you can't focus to see the stuff that doesn't look real. You know?
Yeah, it's just like, well, watch this or watch that or watch this or watch that. You know, it's just sort of like, well, you know, Jesus Christ, you know, it's like I don't know what I'm looking at after a while. I mean, and then, you know, I haven't seen the new Zack Snyder thing yet. You know, there's two camps that really love it, and then there's other people that don't like it. But, you know, I shouldn't be doing this. I was prejudging the trailer, but, I mean, it looked like there was a lot of beautiful design work. But it just looked all like I was playing a video game. So I was already like, you know, I mean, you know, compare that to like what Watchmen that he did when he did Watchmen. It was just beautifully designed. I was more engaged because it actually looked, everything looked physically there. When you start changing the background where it looks like they're on Mars now and it's supposed to be Earth and you have all these people jumping around, you know, like grasshoppers, I don't get engaged in that. I just look at it and go, well, that's fake. Or the worst thing I've ever seen, and he's a amazing director, and actually, you know, not that we're best buddies, but he's such a nice guy, is James Wan, who directed, Aquaman. And I'm looking at that, and I hated the look. It just looked like a bunch of – it looked ridiculous to me. It looked like a Vegas floor show. And it didn't look real at all. Maybe that's the intention, but I wasn't engaged at all in that. You know, trying to look like they're underwater when they're not underwater, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I just saw it for the first time, last week, to be honest with you. So it's kind of funny you brought that up, but, there was some formulaic, it was a little too formulaic for my taste. I know it's a superhero and they want to do a formula, but I mean, him falling in love with that girl, you knew it was going to happen from the very beginning, and where they accidentally grabbed hands and stuff like that, it wasn't organic, any of it, to me. You know what I mean? But you know, what is organic?
Well, it's like even like with the new Joker. You know, I was watching that scene and I was just like, it looks like he ate a bunch of cherry pie. I just don't get that look. You know, I mean, I was just like, well, what is this supposed to be? You know,
so, I did enjoy the acting in it. So I did. That's one thing I did enjoy in that movie. Cool. But, you know, I mean, he's always a wild card. Now you've gotten nominated for awards and stuff. You got nominated for a primetime Emmy for one of my favorite and all comedians' favorite show, at least at one point in our lives, Saturday Night Live. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah. Well, it was a fun, wild, crazy 4 years. I was primarily at first Daryl Hammond's makeup artist. And then I exclusively became, a year later, Will Farrell's personal makeup artist for not only corrective, but prosthetics and then any special effects that went on there as well. So the first day I arrived, I started with Horatio Sanz and Jimmy Fallon. So their first day was my first day, and we became friends. And I'm still friends, very close friends and lifelong friends with Horatio Sands.
Wow.
So, yeah, so he's Jimmy Fallon. I would get a like or a hello on a Twitter. Because you know, look where he's at right now. So it's,
he's busy.
You know, he's so infiltrated, you know, now. And, but I actually got to see everybody, right before COVID. I wind up being, a visit guest on, SNL, and all of the original cast were there when I was there. And it was the first time they were back in 20 years when I was there.
Oh, so
it was a reunion. So,
yeah, I knew about that reunion. Yeah. Jeff Richards, who was in my comedy series, he played a character. He was there. He was on SNL for 4 years. And I knew Daryl Hammond, by the way. If Daryl's, you know, if I walk up to Daryl, he'll be like, "Hey, man, how's it going?" And Will Ferrell, I know his brother, but I only met Will a couple times. But yeah, so continue.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I had a blast with Will and Chris Kattan and the entire cast, because the thing was, is it wasn't just where I did his makeup. We actually all hung out as friends on all the after parties. So I would be with Tracy Morgan at all the after parties, and Horatio and Jimmy Fallon and the cast. So you got to actually... You know, you got to be close personal friends with these people for 4 years.
How did that? That must have been a big high point in your life, right? How did that feel? I mean, that is one of the most. That's probably the most epic show on television. And
I don't really get starstruck. So you got to remember too, Jimmy Fallon wasn't Jimmy Fallon then, and Tracy Morgan's not Tracy Morgan. And most of them weren't who they became. So, and I was used to being around actors. And the one thing with actors that you have any kind of name that they want to be treated like is just people.
Yep.
They don't want to have this whole, you know, star thing. Oh my God. Oh my God. You know, and I never really got starstruck. I mean, there was a few times, maybe Christopher Walken, that when I did his makeup, but you keep that inside.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and you go, wow, this is flipped out. Or like when Vince Vaughn is actually hanging out with you and leaning on your shoulder in the makeup room and talking to you like you're in a scene from Swingers, inside you're freaking out.
Right.
But, you know, on the outside, they just want to be treated like us, like just, you know, hey, and just hang out and not, you know, not be, you know, idolized, you know.
Right. What? No, 100%. It's funny, when I was, I don't know if you know, there used to be a comedy room called Dublin's, and I went out to LA. It was one of my first, it was my first time visiting LA, actually, I think. And I was performing on that show, and I go back to the green room and I see Vince Vaughn talking to a couple of the other comics. And I was like, I mean, I was new to LA, and so I wasn't used to, you know, especially a celebrity being backstage talking to the comics. Right. And so he sees me looking at him as he's talking. He goes to me, he goes, "You know what I mean?" And I go, I had no idea what he was talking about. I go, "Yes, I do. I know exactly what you mean."
That's what I'm talking about. Even if he's aware that you know who he is, and you're going to, he will engage you to bring you in and make you feel that everything is, hey, it's cool.
Dude, the end of our conversation, by the end of our conversation, he's sitting on the stairs looking up at me and going, "I don't know how you do it, man. You're so funny. I don't know how comedians can do it like that, you know?" And he was so genuine, such a great guy.
He is amazing.
Yeah, yeah. And Will was very nice too. I met Will Ferrell before you were on the show, I think, because I was on the I was hanging out on the set when Chris Farley was there, David Spade, Adam Sandler, and Will was just a day player at the time. He wasn't a main person on the show. And he was really nice guy. But
I loved him because there was a certain banter with me and him all the time. He'd always joke. And even there was a season when I was married, and my babysitter happened to be an extra on a TV show called Strangers with Candy. on
I remember that show with Colbert. Yeah. And yeah, that's a quirky show.
Yeah, it was a woman who was in her 40s who was in high school.
Jerry
and
Blake.
And anyway, yes, and my babysitter was just happened to be an extra, and so it happened to be that the guest star was Will Ferrell. And the babysitter went up to him and he says, "Oh, you know, you know my you know my best friend is the niece and is his wife is married to Vincent Guastini." And she goes, "So you know him?" And he does your makeup and he goes, "Yeah, I do. Can you give him a message? Because we were on hiatus for SNL, which goes in hiatus for a couple months." And he goes, "Can you give him a message, please?" And she goes, "Sure." She goes, "Tell him I hate him."
That's awesome.
And so when I saw Will, when we came back, the first thing I said is, "I got your message." And he started laughing his balls off right there. And he goes, "No, but..." And then he just looks at me, he goes, "No, but I mean it." I mean, I didn't even have to bring it up. It just, it was like, it's just, that's the way me and Will, I mean, I was so tight with those guys, with Horatio and all of those, that Jimmy Fallon, because he knew my on-set antics on the show, which I will not get into in a very public forum right now, but it had to deal with the show. Yeah, it had to deal with the ladies, and they did a whole sketch that they wrote, Horatio, Jimmy Fallon, and Will, and they called it the Barbarino Brothers and the Vinnie Barbarino Brothers, and they. It got all the way where it almost got approved, and then Lauren Michaels said no, and so it didn't make it. It didn't make it as a show.
Ah.
So, but yeah, that I'm like, and they were like sitting there talking about the babysitter and some other thing that the babysitter's watching, and Vinny and the Vinnie Barbarino brothers want to go out on the town in New York, and they had this whole thing, and I was so flabbergasted, and it really touched my heart, and so. I love those guys, and I get melancholy, and I miss them, but it's nice. Out of anybody I stay in touch with is Horatio Sands. And that's so, funny. And yeah, and thank God for Instagram and things like that. And, you know, once in a while I'll get a wave or a hello from Catan. And that's nice. You know?
He was going to the Laugh Factory every once in a while when I was out there, and super nice guy, super nice guy.
Yeah, no, and I didn't know this until I saw recent interviews that when I was on the show, now I remember that night, he hurt his back doing a sketch on SNL, and it interrupted his whole career that he had to stop doing things. It was that painful for him, and wow. He was living with that pain, and it only got worse, that it made his neck paralyzed, and he still has that little glitch where he can't quite move his neck right, and he looks a little strange. I didn't know he was going through all of that.
Wow.
You know, and yeah, so he went through a lot, you know, and, you know, he was another one that was very, very nice and very friendly with me. And I've partied and had drinks with him and we'd go to the after parties. But the people I was mainly close with was Tracy Morgan, Will Ferrell, Jimmy Fallon, Horatio Sands, Daryl Hammond, probably for the first year or so. And the rest of the cast too, Sherry O'Terry, Molly Shannon, you know, it was
great. Oh my God. Molly was amazing. I was just a young kid and I was working at the coffee shop downstairs in Rockefeller Center. And she would always come down and talk to me. And when I got up on the set, she's like, "Hey, how are you?" And she would talk to me. And so she was so sweet. Oh my God. I love her.
Yeah.
Really nice.
Yep. Yeah, and, you know, so you got to bond with those people, and you would see every aspect of their personality because you're partying with them. You're getting to see them straight. You're getting to see them drunk. You're getting to see them hurt. You're getting to see them sad. You get to see them happy. So, you know, it was on that aspect, it was really wonderful that you could actually, you know, become friends with the stars of the show, you know.
Yep.
So that was really cool, you know.
Awesome. So we got to go into another segment in a second, but I want to hear what are you working on now so that we What do you have that's coming out that people can see?
Well, right now it's been one marathon run after another. And as far as anything to really see as of recently, the only thing is that COVID has happened. And when COVID happened, it put a lot of things that were either worked on hold or is not out yet. But I've been doing one creature show after another. I just got back from Ohio doing a movie called Never Blink. And it's basically about a creature that moves so quickly, you can't see it. It's in the blink world. And they have this paranormal team that actually goes in to try and show you what that looks like between blinks, that there's a whole other world going on between blinks. We came up with this really crazy monster. And then we did another film, another creature film that has a whole other different aspect that was totally made out of silicone. And I've been skipping and crossing the globe. I mean the United States now. I mean, before COVID, during COVID, during all this time, I think we've had 2 months off the whole time. And I'm about now we're going into doing some age makeups and disguise makeups of an actor called Aubrey, who's the star of Cloak and Dagger for Marvel, the TV series Cloak and Dagger, Aubrey Johnson. And we're going to do like a Coming to America thing where he's going to be like a Tony Soprano type. And we're going to do a grandmother age makeup on him and a grandfather. And then on top of that, now we're about to do a shark movie. We're doing a Jaws type movie that's going to be shooting in Hawaii in June. So, and then I have my own things that are in development right now that I'm having, rewrites and other things that I'm developing on my own that we're in the works on doing as well. And I'm also doing, I can't talk about it all, but what it's involved, but it's a Roland Emmerich film that we're doing some early concept stuff on. And I can't get into that. I'm sorry, what?
I was going to say, you just had the conference call before the show, which is why we weren't sure when you were going to be on the show. So I was like,
No. I mean, it's almost like when there's this much going on, you're almost like a doctor on call, and it's like, okay, we have this operation in this room, and this guy, oh, he got into a car accident and he needs his hand sewn back on. So it almost feels like that. You're on call and you're just like, well, you know, and you got to kind of juggle all these balls, and the phone's ringing, and then you're texting, and then it's a Zoom meeting, and then, oh, you got to send out this, you know, three. I mean, so, and then now you got to start building creatures, and then, oh, you got to travel. So it's, I'm grateful, you know, I really am, but you know, sometimes it's like, wow. You know, slow it down a little bit. You know what I mean? So, you know, just a little bit, you know, so I can breathe. And it's funny, by the time I get up at 6 a.m, it's 7, 8 o'clock at night, which feels like it, like in 2 hours almost, you know, that's how fast it's going by, you know? And so, I mean, already here, you know, it's the end of my day and I still have stuff to do and catch up with, or what I didn't catch up with. And it's 7:07 already here. So,
all right.
That's kind of what's going on right now.
All right. Let's do this then. I know you're in a rush, but I want you to see this last segment. This is a great segment. He does it every week. Anthony is one of our regular, he works on the show every show. He started out as a guest and now he's been doing segments every single show. So let's roll that.
What are your favorite films with practical effects?
There you go.
Oh, what's up, gentlemen? Hey, figured I'd do a little tutorial, a little demo. What do you think? Looks pretty good, right? Yeah?
That's really good effects.
Sorry?
That's really good effects.
Yeah, I got to be honest, it's real. So, goddamn it, that's why I have the segment we have going on today. I was shaken out a duvet cover and I got beat up by a fan. The fan pull chain literally dislodged and punched me in the face. like a damn golf ball. Like nothing has ever happened to me like that ever. Like it wasn't like I thwarted a mugger or I was playing street hockey. I got beat up domestically, like on the worst level. So here we are. By the way, nice to meet you, Vincent. Good to see you. I think we are Facebook pals. Cheers. Love your work.
Cheers.
And I gotta tell you, man, your work was so good. It took me 3 times to get through Requiem. So
thank you. Appreciate it. I'm very proud of them.
Yeah, no, very, it's a fantastic piece of work. It was just so harrowing and like it, I had to take breaths, you know, and I as you can see, I like movies and I have a lot of fucking fucked up movies here. So that's saying a lot that I needed to take a pause. Without further ado, I figured I'd do a starter pack practical effects, just my opinion films. If anybody's finally interested in doing a deep dive on some fun practical effects, everything, as Vincent said, in front of camera. And this is a pure art form. And I feel like it's actually, I don't want to say coming back, but I think it's coming back. I think we all have some CGI fatigue. And at the end of the day, what do you got?
I agree. But the thing is that everybody out here, I guess it's just everybody has been doing practical all through. It's sure. Just changed. That's how I'm looking at it now. In the beginning when this was going on, everybody was nervous. But now it's become, you're right. Now, in the perception is the fatigue of it, but it's still very prominent and as well as practical. And it's everybody thought it was just going to go away, and it hasn't. You know, you got to remember, too, like my friends at K&B, Howard Berger, Greg Nicotero, they've been doing practical – sure. Effects on Walking Dead now for over 6 years.
Yeah.
So, you know, yeah, and absolutely. That's every day with large crews, you know, who are, you know, paying for their homes on that salary. And so by no means every time now that I hear, oh, makeup effects is, is dead or dying. It hasn't gone away. It's just changed.
It's morphed. Yeah. It's morphed with the industry for sure. I think from an right. audience perspective, having something that's actually physically in front of camera. That's why Baby Driver was like, besides it just being a good fucking movie, there was some practical stunt work in there, like in front of camera. Like that was exciting for a lot of people. And that's just obviously, you know, deviating from actual like physical effects in terms of, you know, body horror or whatever. But
it's gotten to the point too. I mean, even like films like Mad Max, people were thinking that a lot of that was CG when it was all practical stunts.
Yeah. Yeah. I saw that 11 times in the theater. For that very reason, it was fucking amazing, I thought. And I love that it took a 71-year-old director to be like, this is how you do it. Or this is how you can do it, you know? So God bless George Miller. For the starter pack, I don't want to gloss over disrespectfully on, like, the classics. Because in terms of makeup, like, you know, Frankenstein, Creatures from Black Lagoon, so on and so forth, The Wolfman. I just say you just dive into the Godzilla, you know, movies, boom, 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 right? Just get your popcorn, smoke up if you got them, have a sip if you want, fold laundry while you're watching it, beautiful miniature work, fantastic destruction, and that's a great starting point, in my opinion. Since we're going to keep this segment kind of short, and Vincent, I think, brought this up earlier, Ray Harryhausen, you cannot mess with Jason the Argonauts, one of the most perfect films, in my opinion, ever made. When I saw this as a kid, I didn't even understand that could be done. I felt like my nightmares had become real. It was fantastic. So this is the best, in my opinion, of his work. But I gotta say, Clash of the Titans is a beautiful picture. So yes, this is a great one too.
I love that as a kid.
Yeah, I was just like, are you kidding me? Is this like real life? Like this was, it was a big seminal moment for me. And I don't wanna skip too hard, but 2001, A Space Odyssey, beautiful miniatures in this one. People find it to be very slow. I find it to be a beautiful piece of art.
I love that movie. I've probably seen that more. I mean, just out of my father taking me to 42nd Street mistakenly, having me see it seven or eight times because the poster was different on the marquee every couple of weeks. So he thought it was a new science fiction movie, but we've already seen it. It was 2001 Space Odyssey.
Meanwhile, you're like, yeah. It's well, funny.
My father would fall asleep and say, "Well, that's all right. It's a good movie." And then I wind up watching, you know, the whole world warp at the end several times. So it affected me. It's one of my favorite science fiction films of all time. And I'm not saying it because a lot of people like to say that too, to be pretentious and saying, oh, of course it's the greatest.
Right.
But I really, really, I really, really love it.
Oh, it's ahead of its time to say the cheesy phrase, but it's absolutely true.
Well, I mean, just the aspect of the alien thing, you know, and the moon stuff. Like, you know, if you remember, they had the thing where there was like artifacts on the moon and things like that. I mean, that movie made that a serious subject before that stuff even became popular on YouTube. Yeah. So everything that Kubrick set up actually became, in a way, fruition in some weird way as an obsession later on in pop culture.
Oh, yeah, 100%. It's funny. Actually, the first time I saw this, 2001, I saw it on like a 13-inch, you know, television, and I hated it. And then American Movie Classics, the theater, AMC Theaters came out, and for the first 2 weeks they showed The Greats. My dad's like, I'm taking you to see 2001. And thank God he did, because I saw it in the big screen and I'm like, okay, this is what I was missing. And from then, I think it was like 95 or 4 or whatever. It's been my favorite.
Well, I'm old enough to be grown up around when my father took me to see all the Planet of the Apes movies.
Nice.
And
yeah,
then,
there you
know,
go.
And then, you know, and then when I was a kid, you know, WPIX, the 4:30 movie or Channel 11 would have King Kong on like all week long.
Oh, cool.
And I would watch every single, every single showing of King Kong I would watch. So, yeah, I mean, my whole life was infused with practical effects.
King Kong was my favorite, man. King Kong.
It's funny. I got to say, probably this next movie made me want to be a director. And I was 5 years of age when it came out. Okay. The Dark Crystal. Okay. Aside from the ending, and I'm not even like talking down on it. It's just some of the visual effects at the end, the optical effects don't necessarily age well. But beyond that 22nd bit at the end, it's a pretty fucking incredible achievement, even for now, as a matter of fact. And a lot of people I still talk to haven't seen it. I'm like, how can you not see this one?
What did you think of the Netflix? I thought the Netflix thing, I was watching the 80s again.
I got to be honest. I watched 2 episodes and then life. I'm like, I got to get back to it. Yeah, you know, like I was pumped for it. Absolutely. In fact, they had some novel contest for the Dark Crystal novel the Jim Henson Studios was putting on like in 2015. So I wrote, 10,000 words. Didn't make it, but it was a good, enjoyable time visiting the world of Thra. But Dark Crystal, it's on the list. I'm going to move over to Chris Wayless, dude, right here. Boom. Gremlins and The Fly. Double feature right there. Gremlins and The Fly is pretty fucked up, especially if you go back to back. He actually went on to do The Fly, too. He directed that one. But I understand Gremlins was a nightmare to make. But in terms of practical puppetry, I mean, it's a pretty punk rock movie. And The Fly is just incredible. I'm even rocking my video drum, out of respect for Cronin. But The Fly totally holds up. It's just a goopy mess in terms of just the transformation, and it's wonderful.
I made a joke about that. I said I accidentally microwaved The Fly, and it came out looking like Jeff Goldblum.
Mm. There's something there. That's good. That's good. But I don't want to jump around too much. Too late. You got to do The Exorcist, and this is a random one to choose for Stan Winston. Spasms. Okay. Spasms.
I got to correct you. That's Dick Smith.
Is it?
Yes. Spasms was.
Forgive me. Forgive
Smith.
Me. Yes. And what did I just say, sir?
Stan Winston.
Yes. Okay. Stan Winston. Yes. Redo that. Yes. Dick Smith. Thank you. God bless you. See, this is why we have technical advisors on the show. Yes. Dick Smith. There's too many effects artists around me right now, believe me, in physical form. This movie, obviously, Exorcist, was perfect for the aging effects. Well, that was Godfather. But in terms of the possession effects, this is why this movie holds up to this day. Now, he's the one who did the mechanical dummy effect, which spun her head around. And he also did the pea soups vomit. But this movie is still brutal to this day. It's funny. I go online and people are just talking shit on how it doesn't hold up. God bless them. I'm not clowning anybody younger than 25. It's just an opinion. They live in a different world than maybe some of us. And that's fine. But this movie is fucking incredible, in my opinion. It totally holds up. And in terms of effects, God, this yes. is the yes. one. Yeah.
It's well, definitely. I mean, that's who my mentor was. That's who started me in the business was Dick Smith.
Nice.
And then the guy that assisted him, Bob Layden, is the one that actually took over the age makeup from Dick on Max Van Sydow. So I was trained by two of the best makeup people in the world. Right.
Sounds
there.
Like it. Wow, that's incredible. And God bless Max Von. What a life that guy led.
By the way, it's hard to convince younger kids to even watch old movies, let alone, you know, if they watch them on the TV, they're not going to get the same effect unless they had, you know, a 72-inch screen with surround sound. They're not going to understand seeing these movies in the theater, how mind-blowing it was.
But I got to tell you, TVs are getting cheaper and they're getting larger. So. Yeah.
But they still want to watch old movies.
No, I know. And you know what it is? And I fell prey to this myself is I felt movies and music started when I discovered it. And that's a problem, you know? And it right. took me in my probably mid-teens to be like, dude, there's a fucking world that started before you, man. Look into it, dude. There's a fucking pot of gold there. So I'm still playing that. I mean, all this shit, I haven't seen all these fucking movies.
Yep.
It's just almost impossible to. Right. But I'm going to close it out with Dick Smith's Spasms. And this one's fucked up, dude. It's not a fantastic movie, but the effects, I mean, I'm going to pull in on that. This guy got bitten by a snake, and he's just – the air effects are going fucking crazy on this one, dude. It's awesome. And it's really just unsettling. So throw it in. Fold laundry while you're watching it. It's a goodie. Okay, so there's that one. I can't not talk about Rob Bottin. Oh. This is the fucking one that fucked me up. It was the coolest thing I'd ever seen next to Ray Harryhausen's work. I couldn't believe they could fucking pull this shit off. I saw this as a way too young kid, and it forever changed me. Let's talk about The Thing.
All right.
Well, let's talk about The Thing.
Well, I mean, now you hit upon it, because what's funny about that movie is the stuff that he did. Some people in the younger generation think it was CGI. It didn't even exist then. Because his work is so mind-boggling, especially the effects he did, which he won a visual effects award for. He won an Oscar for Total Recall. He won a special technical Oscar for that. And so, Rob's style, imagination, at 21 years old, and also did The Howling.
Yeah.
And he's doing work better than what we do today with millions of dollars and a whole floor full of computer experts can't even beat. And that was done over 30 years ago. Over 30 years ago, done by a kid.
Yeah, I think the only like CGI picture at the time was maybe Tron, and then a couple years later, Last Starfighter. But incredible work. And you know, every now and then I'll just be finding myself around the house. I'm like, you know what? I want to watch the transformation scene and The Thing, and I'll just go to YouTube. I'm just like, okay, I got my fix. This is great. And then I go on with my day. I was able to capture it at I think it was the Egyptian Theater. They had 35mm print. It was kind of magented out, but it was awesome.
I was there for that.
So. Oh, cool, man.
I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah, I couldn't have missed it. And I think Poltergeist was after that. Maybe the Poltergeist was magented out. I don't remember. But another fantastic piece of work right there. Let's wrap it up, I guess. We got a few more. Speaking of Stan Winston, beautiful piece of work with the Terminator. This one's enjoyable, and it's just more of a tough film. There are set pieces in terms of the practical effects throughout, but it's not littered throughout the movie. It's like, here it is, here it is, here it is. And when it shows up, it's fucking excellent. So dude, throw the Terminator on your list for anybody who's watching out there, hasn't seen it.
For the time, it was the best movie, one of the best movies I'd ever seen.
Dude, it's so hardcore.
It's
still hardcore. Like, if you think about it independently, forget about everything afterward.
The new ones suck.
Is what it is.
I'm sorry. The new ones suck compared to the original. They really, you can't.
Well, you know, if that's how you feel, then you're not wrong.
There's only a certain number of times you can do the same story And not, especially with a time travel movie.
Or undo the same story, sir.
You know what I mean? I'm sorry. It's yeah. not because of the effects or anything. It's because you're convoluting it so much that, you know, it's like, okay, come on now.
Yeah, I didn't love the new one. I thought there was moments that, you know, the CGI was like, I was like, oh, it looks pretty good.
I did like the series. Did you see the series?
You touched on it, Anthony, when you said it took you time to realize there was a whole world before you gained interest. Mm-hmm. So they come out with a new movie to capitalize on the market of people who are not going to look back and not going to see an old movie from the past. Right. So for them, the story is new. And for us, it's not as good.
But the thing is, they understand that nostalgia is a powerful drug, and we will see it. I mean, that's why there's less risk in getting a already tentpole franchise or something that was, you know, made yesteryear that had success then. Let's, you know, just up
they
it
should,
up.
They should acknowledge that in the name. Like, you know, the movie number 7 should be this time. Listen, we got bills. You know what I'm saying? It should just be more of an open and honest event.
Yeah, I just wish like the new Point Break remake just called itself something different, like Extreme Heist, you know, because like the original Fast and Furious is the same movie as Point Break. You know, they just had the, you know, decency to change the title. You know, it's the same plot.
I can't stand when they remake a movie like we were just talking about Total Recall. The remake.
I understand it's not bad. I haven't seen it. I'm just saying what I've heard. I could be wrong. Tell me.
All of the good story plot points were torn out of the script. There was no real story compared to the original. The original script was incredible. If they just redone the script.
Yeah, I was in, I think it was in fourth grade, dating myself, but when that movie came out and we saw it in the theater, like we snuck in.
Yeah.
Maybe sixth grade. It was a fucking important time in my life to see that movie in the theater. Because like I grew up in a pretty strict household where you couldn't see shit. Mm. So, which is explains this. But anyway, it was fucking such a good fucking movie, dude. So anyway, yeah, Total Recall is great. And I want to bring something up in terms of 2001. If I can go back to Vincent, it's not Blue Danube. I think it's the other song, but. I went to the Arrow Theater and James Cameron was there. It was a double feature with The Abyss and Aliens. And with my friend Wally, who's been a guest on this show. And he actually may hang out on the after party, by the way, if there is one.
Oh, great.
And so he was answering questions, you know, James Cameron. And I wanted to ask him, in True Lies and in Titanic, he has ended the film. Well, in True Lies, he ended the film where the camera tilts up and spins and you see a kind of a ballroom with the 2001 music. So it's almost like reminiscent of the mouse wheel. And then he did the same thing in the center lobby, if you will, of the Titanic ship, where he spun with that same music. There's the mouse wheel again. And he pulled down. And it was an absolute homage to Kubrick. It has to be. Wow. But I didn't get my question in. And I just want to put it out there in the ether for anybody to, you know, look into it or see it for yourselves.
Well,
it's just like kind of a nugget.
I'm sure James is watching the show right now. So
Sure. Well, I mean, Vincent's on. Come on, of course.
He's probably going to call in a few minutes, and we'll straighten it out.
James, call ins are timeless. I love it. So yeah, you know, there's that. But I'm skipping all around. But come on, dude, are you fucking kidding me? Rick Baker's beautiful masterpiece. That, in my opinion, and I think many people's opinion, obliterates any werewolf transformation to this day. Yep. It's funny because when I go to YouTube and I look at that, I read the comments. People are like, "This is garbage." It's like, are you kidding me? Like, am I not seeing the same thing that they're seeing?
What movie is it? I couldn't read it.
American Werewolf in London.
Oh, that's, okay.
Sure. That movie's one of the biggest influences on my film and the transformation of my character, Vincent, you know this. We want to make it practical. At least the first one, the first transformation, to make it look real, because then CGI doesn't look real. It doesn't look real.
Not with the lycanthropy bit. I mean, it's just like all of a sudden there's wolf out. It's just like,
yeah.
I'd rather go for like the, you know, time lapse makeup effect. Yes. At least there's charm in that now. But yep. I don't know.
For a brief moment, I was actually involved in the remake with Max Landis.
Oh wow! And, I heard about that.
So, Yeah, and it was unfortunate that, you know, he's part of the new, you know, he's gone.
There's been a cleansing of sorts, for better or worse. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
So part of that cleansing went me getting a chance to, and he finally, he actually gave approval, final approval, not only for the wolf that we did, for designs, you know, but we were pretty close to going ahead, and that was unfortunate. And, but as far as American Werewolf versus The Howling, I love both. I think I'm a little bit more scared of the one in The Howling, the final wolf on twos. That kind of creeped me out a lot more than The Howling one. I mean, the American Werewolf one. But when it's running in the streets, the subway scene in American Werewolf,
that's brutal.
All that stuff is like holy shit. It's like a real animal. And they're different. I mean, Howling was more like, a fairy tale horror movie come to life, like the big bad wolf, and American Werewolf was more like a hellhound, like a real animal.
Yeah. So there's a young Mick Garris at the end, isn't there, in The Howling, right? He's watching TV, young Mick Garris.
Yep. Yeah, he is. Yes, he is.
Yeah.
Yep.
Love it. I understand. Landis wanted to get American Werewolf off the ground for many years. Then he heard Howling was in production, and he just rushed it. He's like, I got it. And I understand he wanted to, you know, he didn't want somebody to beat him with a punch, or that was his moment to do it. And he did it. He made it happen. But you're right, though. There is definitely a threat to the scene in The Howling, because Dee Wallace is just standing there for a long while. But she, there's a threat in there. I mean, she could get killed at any moment. So it's really fucked up. And I remember KTLA, because I grew up in LA, they did this Monster Week where they spotlit the behind the scenes effects. So that's how I saw The Howling of sorts when I was four. You know, so like, I didn't see the movie until several years later, but I digress.
That's when I saw Magic, where Burgess Meredith got beat to death with a
spoiler, bro. We talked about this in the last episode.
No. It's not a new movie that's out right now.
No, I know. I got a friend who I'm like, dude, why are you spoiling this movie, bro? And he's like, dude, it's been out 40 years. I'm like, right. So, like, I haven't seen it. Let's just kind of end this segment with Evil Dead 2. This is fun as shit. It's just effects in your face, and they shot it in a gym, and they built the cabin inside. It's beautiful. So check it out. And Toxic Avenger and Class of Nukem High, man. This is just like fun shit, all about the effects. The story is enjoyable. There's a lot of TNA. I mean, what's not to like? Lloyd Kaufman and company. So I'm just going to –
Love Lloyd. Lloyd's a great guy.
Yeah, I met him a handful of times. He actually he got my boss's first film off the ground, Cannibal the Musical. When nobody wanted to release that film, Lloyd picked it up. This is Trey Parker. And Lloyd picked it up. He enjoyed the movie, got it right away. And it's funny, once South Park came out, everybody who denied Cannibal the Musical, they came back to like, oh my gosh, this movie's fantastic. We'd love to pick it up. And they're like, sorry, we're in bed with trauma forever.
Well, I actually got to work and I designed the devil on Toxic Avenger 3.
Oh,
and
cool, man.
I actually, when it first came, and the first big party I've ever went to was the very famous Trey Parker Valentine's Day party up in the hills with them.
Did he have red carpet in his house?
Yeah, they were all dressed as Japanese, warriors. They had outside guarding the house, and they were all in kimonos. And it was the craziest party I've ever seen or ever been involved with in Hollywood ever. And it was the first year that I came out here, and it was for Valentine's Day, because I knew one of the writers who was a friend of mine invited me. And I don't know if you ever went to one of their parties back then.
I went to that very house you're talking about. I think it was on like Chalet Road or whatever the fuck. But yeah, it's whatever, in Bel-Air.
All I know is you had to go up this giant hill. Yeah. And then after being fucked up and on E and everything else, you had to go down that hill.
No, we had a, what was it? I think we just had, we had a Christmas party there. And he had the glass fireplace that was like you can see it.
Right.
He's since moved. Actually, that whole block was given to teachers because there was a school across the street. So that whole block, all those houses were bought out and given to the teachers of that school.
Oh,
holy
wow.
shit. Yeah, right?
Wow.
Yeah. That's some justice right there. Like, shit.
Crazy.
I was doing karaoke at a bar on the Upper West Side. Matt Stone was there. And this girl who was a waitress, very beautiful Indian girl with a British accent. I was madly in love with her, but I never had a chance. She introduced me. She liked me, though. She introduced me to Matt. We started hanging out, and I started busting on him instead of kissing his ass, like, which is what most people probably do. Like you were talking, Vincent, that you know, they want to be treated like normal people. And I had him laughing a little bit. And I go, hey, I'm going up to sing. He goes, I'll be right there. So I go up to sing. And in this particular bar, everybody was just standing. You know what I mean? There was no seats except at the bar. Okay, so everybody else is standing around in front of me. Matt comes up, brings a chair, puts it right on the ground, and sits like a foot from me. and he folds his arms. He's like this, waiting for me to sing. So I sang "I Want You to Want Me" by Cheap Trick, and I danced around. It was basically like I gave him a lap dance, and he was laughing his ass off the whole time. Afterwards, he's like, "I think I've told this story to you before." He was like, yeah, man, that was great, man. You know, when you get out to LA, here's the number of the office. Give me a call. I'll show you around LA. When I got out to LA, I first of all, it took a little too long. I didn't get there as soon as I wanted to. It's one of those things where I didn't have the money at the time when I was like, yeah, I'll be there, you know? And by the time
he's thinking tomorrow.
Right, right.
And by now, like 2 years later, hey, remember that one time?
By the time I got there, I called and I said, Matt gave me this number. And he said, I'm in LA. He said, when I get out here, you know, whatever. And she was like, I think she was an intern or a gatekeeper. She just wouldn't put me through. She wouldn't tell him. She was just like, I'm sorry, but this is the office number. You're going to have to call him personally. And I never got to see him. So
I know he thinks about it to this day.
I know
he's that one guy who sang Cheap Trick.
I was thinking,
give me a lap dance.
And I wanted to do a Say Anything where I bring the boombox and hold it outside the offices.
That wouldn't have gone well. Wouldn't have gone well. Yeah. I've been there for 17 years now. And
unfortunately,
they have ways of dealing with that.
What's that?
Unfortunately, in Hollywood, you either got to be fresh right away or and if it's years later, you have to be refreshed. And refreshing to be back on their radar is, oh, look, he's done that hit movie. Or, oh, look, he wrote that hit movie. Or, oh, look, he has, you know. It's where you are on the radar, you know. You're easily swept aside, you know, when it comes to the business out here.
Question real quick, if I may, just candidly ask Vincent a question here. How booked, if it's personal, you don't have to ask, but how booked in the future are you at this point? Is 2022 malleable? Beyond,
well, we
depends on the project, of course, but like, you know, if the right one came along,
we could talk about this in the after party, I think, because we've been going,
of course, but just I'm going somewhere with this.
I'm a little confused. Are you saying, are you directing a film that you want me to do effects on, is what you're trying to say? Or,
well, if the stars align, I actually was fortunate enough to rewrite the reboot of Attack the Killer Tomatoes, and it's coming back.
Yeah.
Same cats. Gotcha. And I tried to put a lot of physical effects in it, as much as I could, at least. So there's that. It was approved, then COVID hit, but we're, you know, picking up steam again.
It's going to happen, though. Dude, it's going to happen.
Just throwing it out there. Putting it on the radar, my friend.
Thank you.
This is the same crew from, you know, yesterday.
Cool, awesome. Awesome.
Yeah, you know, yeah. So I figured they figured I was the right guy. Well, thank you. Thank you. I've been writing for 22 years without getting paid, so it was nice to get some money. So
there you go.
There was that. That's great.
Sounds exciting.
We'll talk.
Yes, please.
But dude, good to meet you, bro. Love your work. And
you know, it was funny because I was gonna bring that up in the after party, because I knew you were writing that movie And so I
it's been written for over a year at this point. Just
I knew you were
derailed working. Everything. Like, nope, nothing. We're like, all right, well, it is what it is. Okay. I was on a high, right, and then, I mean,
so we'll be talking dying. Okay. In about 10, 5, like 3 minutes, we'll be talking about this. Mm-hmm. For now, I just want to give everybody a warm round of applause. Everything will be on LinkedIn, anything if you want to get in touch or see the work of these people. We will have it in the description after the show. Guys, thank you so much for watching. Please tell your friends. Please donate. We have a link on Anchor. There you go, right at the bottom. And this will, we're on 9 platforms now. This show will be on YouTube tomorrow. So if you don't get this link for donations, you can get it tomorrow. Otherwise, guys, thank you so much. And I should say the link for the audio version. It's anchor.fm/the Danny McDermott Show/support. Right now we are not supported.
I support you every night. We're
supported by you're thank supported. You. We're every all supported. Night, started, but thank you guys.
I promise, Danny. Right after this broadcast, I'll send you $20. No problem.
Yeah. They say if somebody loans you $20, you never see them again. It's probably worth it.
It should keep the show on at least another 2 years, right?
That's 6 years worth of income all at once. The compound interest alone is going to keep us going.
Especially if we invest in Bitcoin. Okay, and credits.
All right, guys.
Nope.
Blah, 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 blah.